Hey folks, I want to remind you that the Turning Point Action People's Conference is coming up this June 14th to 16th in Detroit, Michigan. Get your tickets and then go to unhumansbook.com to come to a special meet and greet for the launch party of the Unhumans book with myself and Joshua Lysak. I'll see you there in Detroit.
This is what happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
We've been categorizing these communist revolutions throughout the ages. We've put up a huge series of podcasts called The China Files. Many of you may have seen that. We put up another one earlier this year, The Chronicles of the Revolution. And we're getting all the way up to the cultural Marxists of today. And so tonight, I'm proud to announce that we have signed a deal with a publisher. We are going to be publishing all of this in a new book that will teach us all how to identify the cultural Marxists, how to use their playbook against them, how to crush their revolutions, and we will specifically call them that which they are. Because they reject the human rights of others, they reject the humanity of their oppressed classes, I submit to you that they themselves have become the unhumans.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily, live from Madrid, Spain. Today is April 30th, 2024, Anno Domini. Here with your host and co-host, you've got Jack Posobiec and...
Tanya Tate Posobiec. Hello.
Tanya Tate Posobiec. Well, today we're going to take you on a bit of a trip that we... we're able to just take, and we want to be able to explain it to you. In the heart of Spain, nestled among the rugged peaks of the Guadarrama Mountains, about 1 mile, 1 hour north of Madrid, lies a place of solemn beauty and haunting history. It's called the Valley of the Fallen, a monument shrouded in controversy, yet steeped in reverence. As we embark on this journey of remembrance and reflection, we delve into the depths of its past to uncover the layers of meaning it holds for Spain and for us today. Commissioned by General Francisco Franco in the aftermath of the Spanish Civil War, the Valley of the Fallen stands as a testament to the conflicting narratives of a nation torn asunder by ideology and strife. Built to honor the fallen of both sides, it serves as a physical embodiment of Spain's quest for reconciliation and healing. Yet beneath that grandeur lies the darker truths. History marred by politics, by the suffering of the war, of the civil war in Spain, 1936 to 1939. The struggle against communism, the struggle of Catholicism and Christianity against atheism. The Valley of the Fallen bears witness not only to the sacrifices of war, but also to the wounds that linger long after the guns have fallen silent. Yet amidst these shadows of the past, there's also light, a glimmer of hope that through remembrance, through dialogue, through a true understanding of history, we can transcend the divisions that once tore us apart. And so we are going to take you on a journey deeper into the heart of the Valley of the Fallen. And we invite you to join us on this voyage of discovery, reflection, and healing. This is not merely a story about Spain. It's a universal tale of the human spirit, resilience, redemption, the enduring power of memory and legacy. What you're told about the Spanish Civil War is only half of the story. And half stories and half truths are mistruths. The Spanish Civil War was not a story about tyranny attempting to overthrow a country. It was a story about patriots, about nationalists, and about believers in Christ Jesus who rose up to stop the communist atrocities that were going on in their country and to save Spain from certain doom. The largest cross on the face of planet Earth resides at the Valley of the Fallen today. It's about the same size as the Washington Monument. There's a reason that it's there. There's a reason that the Valley of the Fallen was commissioned, but we also have to tell you about the stark truth that the current socialist government of Spain is attempting to dismantle, take apart, and destroy the Valley of the Fallen. They want to turn it into a museum of horrors and strip away the actual history of the people of Spain, of which it represents. Stay tuned. Jack and Tanya Tay take you to the Valley of the Fallen. Be right back.
Be right back.
But I got a hankering, a yearning deep inside, for this book called Unhumans I just can't hide.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Madrid, Spain, with
Tanya Tay Posobiec.
We are here, folks, real quick, with the world descending quickly into chaos. The next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it's another pandemic or something closer to home, preparedness is no longer an option. It's a necessity. That's where the wellness company comes in. From something innocent and natural like a tick bite to COVID to the next bioweapon manufactured in a lab, the wellness company's emergency medical kit is what you need to be prepared. It contains life-saving medications. We're talking ivermectin, emergency antibiotics, a Z-Pack, so much more, as well as a guidebook to aid in the safe use of these life-saving medications. Look, Tanya Tay and myself, we love that the wellness company and their doctors, including Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Reich, Dr. Drew Rapinski, Dr. Robert Seek, and so many more are medical professionals that we can trust. So rest assured knowing that your family is ready for whatever the globalists throw at you next. To order, just go to twc.health/poso. That's twc.health/poso and enter promo code POSO for 10% off. The wellness company and their licensed doctors are medical professionals you can trust, and their medical emergency kits are the gold standard to keeping your family safe. Again, it's twc.health/poso, promo code POSO for 10% off. See the site for details. Prescription may be required. Look, what can I say? We love the fact, don't we love the fact that when we go on travel, we know, we don't have the kids with us this time, but even when we do, we love the fact that the wellness company has given us this huge kit that we're able to take and take exactly what we want and what we need, because let's face it, getting medicine overseas sometimes can be a little bit tricky.
The first thing I packed was actually a set of medicine just to make sure we are ready to go when we need to, and got to be camera ready.
You got to be camera ready. You know what I'm saying? No stomach bugs, no weird bacteria picked up overseas, whatever it is. We know COVID-19 started overseas in China. Fortunately, not there today, but you know what it is. That's what I love about the wellness company, and that's what I love with being there. So give people a couple more facts about the Valley of the Fallen, and I want to turn to Tanya Tay in just a quick second, and I'll say it's this. Spanish Civil War is one of the most lied about conflicts on the face of the planet. It's also one of the least well-known in the United States. So you have nationalists versus communists. The nationalists win. The communists proceed to lie about it for the next almost 100 years. We're about 90 years away now. And the Valley of the Fallen was built by General Franco. And it was his, which we talk about at great length in Unhumans. Go to unhumansbook.com. By the way, the book launch, we have already decided it's going to be June 15th. It's going to be in Denver, in Detroit at the People's Convention there. So we're going to be with Charlie Kirk. Steve Bannon will be there. Tanya Tay is yet to give me confirmation whether or not she will be at the book
undecided.
Launch. Undecided. Can you believe this? I take her all the way to Spain, and she tells me that she's not sure if she's going to be at the book launch yet. So I'll have to work on her.
I have to check my schedule.
She has to check her dance card, yeah. But so unhumansbook.com is where you can go. We're doing signed copies. It's an early edition of the book. Myself, I'll be there. So you can meet me, get the book signed. Joshua Lysak, Steve Bannon is there, and he's told me that he's also going to be signing books. So we write about this a ton in the book. But for those who haven't read it yet, give you a little explanation of one of the things. This is a massive monument that's built for the Spanish Civil War, for both sides. People need to understand that. I'm going to say it again and again. Both sides, into an actual mountain about an hour north of Madrid here. And the fact of the matter is that the socialists hate it so much, they want to tear it down. They want to get rid of the basilica. And they want to, and they've already, by the way, I'll just say this to give you kind of the stakes. Francisco Franco, his body was buried there after he died in the 70s, and it was removed. Wasn't it removed?
It was exhumed and buried now in Madrid.
It was buried in Madrid. So he's with his family now. So the socialists hate Franco so much that they dug his body out of the Valley of the Fallen and brought it all the way back to Madrid. That's just a couple of years ago. That's how much they hate this guy, because he's the one who beat them. But before we go into any of any more of the specifics of the Civil War, Tanya Tay, I got to ask you, walking around the Valley of the Fallen today, what did it feel like? What were your experiences? What were you thinking? What's your takeaways?
I got to be frank up front. It was
not. Don't you mean Franco up front?
Got me. It was not on my to-do list in Madrid. I had my check-by-check plan set up with all the places I wanted to visit. Park Retiro Row. I wanted to visit the market. I wanted to visit the palace.
Where did we go yesterday?
We went to all of those places.
Every single one of the places you wanted to go to.
We did. Little did I know that there is such a magnificent place that just makes you so overwhelmed. Just a short drive away from Madrid. Funny enough, as you're driving your car, you wouldn't even tell that there's something there. If not for one little thing. There is a huge cross that I saw at least 30 minutes prior to us arriving to the spot.
You see this cross. It's mountains.
It's impossible to miss.
So there's mountains, and it's like you see it, and then it hides behind the mountain. Then you see it again, and then as you get closer, you're like, that cross seems pretty big, and it just gets bigger and bigger, because the cross itself is the size of the Washington Monument. And then you realize it's itself on top of the mountain. And then you realize that the mountain is actually a basilica that's been excavated to be one of the largest basilicas in the world.
And it's sitting in the mountain.
Just, sitting out by itself. And so you realize, hey, there's something special about this.
And I actually heard a few people mention that as you land in Madrid, you actually are able to see the cross looking out of the plane. So just to give you the scale at which that cross sits in that valley, it's so incredible, it's so captivating in a sense, yet it leaves you in a complete awe of just the symbol of Christianity, of the great symbol that people put into that. That just overlooks the whole valley,
the
mountains, the power that it holds, and the remembrance of all the people fallen in that civil war.
And as you walk through the front gate, what's the first thing you see is?
You see the mother crying over her son.
It's the Pietà.
The Pietà.
The Pietà, Mary holding Jesus right over the front of it. So it's Christian symbols everywhere. The massive gates made out of wrought iron, depicting the stations of the cross as you go in. And so for people to understand, Spain is one of the most Catholic countries on the planet. And this really is a huge monument to, it's sort of worked in both, not only to the fallen, but also to the history of Spain as a Catholic country, the history of Spain as an empire, the power of Spain as it was in the past, and basically the character and nature of Spain. How did you feel, you know, kind of walking around as we, after we got inside, walking the grounds?
You know, it really was a chilling experience because you are admiring the parts of the architecture, the fact that there is a Catholic basilica sitting right in the mountain. But at the same time, all I was thinking about was over 33,000 people whose lives were lost during the terrible civil war and what an impact it had on so many generations after those.
And it's still felt today, because even as you go throughout Spain, they sort of have this. So the socialists, you know, they hate Franco. They hate him, and they're trying to strip him away from Spain as much as possible. And so the problem is that even when they take away all of his symbols, and it's actually to the point now where even in Spain, I can guarantee you, this episode will be banned in Spain. That's 100%. This episode will be banned. Images of Franco are banned. His symbols are banned. The last time we did an episode about Franco, it was banned in Spain. So I'm sure this episode will get banned as well, because they have something called the National Memory Law. Think about that. A law regulating the memory of the nation, like it's straight out of 1984. And funny enough, what war did George Orwell, the writer of 1984, fight in was the Spanish Civil War.
Spanish Civil War.
He fought in the Spanish, George Orwell fought in the Spanish Civil War for the communists, because he went over believing that the communist side was the righteous side, because he believed all the propaganda. And it was the Spanish Civil War, and specifically the propaganda of the Spanish Civil War, that kind of opened his eyes to the world of propaganda, to the power of propaganda, which leads him to write Animal Farm, which leads him to write 1984. But actually, his original book that he had written before all of those was Homage to Catalonia, George Orwell's book about the Spanish Civil War. Not funny enough, but what people don't know is that he almost died in that war because he got shot in the throat. Imagine George Orwell, one of the writers in the 1930s, before any of the books were written, was shot in the throat, basically shot in the head, and almost died, and miraculously came out. And I believe it was God. I believe God wanted George Orwell to make it out of there alive, to tell people the truth about what was going on. Be right back. More Jack Posobiec, Tanya Tay, The Valley of the Fall in the Spanish Civil War.
Tales of the communist history. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Could send a mystery. The hidden tales of the communist history. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Pre-ordering live.
Jack Posobiec back live here with
Tanya Tay Posobiec
and Human Events Daily, live Madrid, Spain. Tanya, I got a question for you. You ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Have you ever had a conversation with someone and the next thing you know, you're getting ads for exactly what you were just talking about?
Happened to me all the time.
Call it ad popping. And I'll tell you something. Between the government, big tech, corporate America, and criminals, Tanya Tay's privacy is compromised 24/7. That's on top of the side effects that Tanya Tay is getting from the radiation that cell phone companies swear is safe and the brain-numbing effects that Tanya Tay is getting from social media. Tanya Tay should detox from her phone today from Silent. Silent is a light and portable Faraday sleeve for Tanya Tay's mobile device that protects her privacy, security, and health. Its patented silent pocket Faraday technology blocks harmful radiation and all wireless signals that will give Tanya Tay the peace of mind that her personal data will never end up in the wrong hands. Go silent today at slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO and save 15% on free shipping and qualifying orders. Look, I'm in the spotlight. I'm challenging the government, the Klaus Schwabs, the big corporate interest is on top of the left. I got to protect my privacy at all times. And so does Tanya Tay. And we are thankful that Silent was created. Go to slnt.com/poso. Again, that's slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO to save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. By the way, when you go to slnt.com/poso, you'll see a photo of me holding the Silent Faraday sleeve. Who took that photo?
I did.
She's the one who took the photo.
And after visiting the Valley of the Fallen, I got to tell you, I need all the protection I can get.
All the protection. So, ton of places to go with this. And people need to understand a couple of things about the Valley of the Fallen. But the main piece that's really, really going in here is that this isn't just something that happened a long time ago, because there's a huge part of it that's coming up now. I want to read you a story. This is from the article of the European Conservative. The socialist prime minister of Spain currently is planning to expel the monks from the Valley of the Fallen. So when I mentioned that there's the basilica there, there's also a Benedictine monastery at the Civil War monument. And they want to turn the site with the basilica and monastery into, quote, an interpretive center. Oh, interpretive. Listen to this. This is something that Pedro Sanchez, who's the current socialist prime minister of the government of Spain, he is under multiple cases of corruption, one of which includes his wife, Begoña Gómez. He was talking about potentially resigning this week, but he isn't. What he's doing instead is going after the Valley of the Fallen. And the PSOE, particularly the socialists, are constantly going after this. And so they've already removed Franco's body out, taken away. Since the 1990s, forensic doctors and researchers have been identifying specifically the bodies of all those buried at the request of family members. So he's targeted, he's tightening the memory law. He's institutionalized a one-sided revisionist history of the Spanish Civil War and now making moves on the Valley of the Fallen itself. He even changed the name. What's the new name? How do you say it?
I tried and practiced it, but I couldn't say it right away.
Cuelgamuros, Valley of the Cuelgamuros. So no, Valley of the Fallen. Valley of the Fallen. We're going Valley of the Fallen. And he's now talking about removing the monks from their monastery. He's talking about shutting down the basilica, turning the whole place. He calls it an interpretive center. No, he wants it to be this horror, the horrors of the right. We can never allow the right back in. It has to be completely revisionist. We have to say Franco is evil. Franco is a very, very bad man, very, very naughty man, and never, ever tell the other half. And that's why you can never only listen to one half of the story. You have to always say, who were they fighting? What was he fighting against? Why was there a civil war? But I'll tell you something else. There's a couple of ways we can go with this, but do you think that this is only going to be Spain where the left tries to change history, to try to revise history, taking down statues, digging up bodies? No, we know this is exactly what they're going to do in America. They're already talking about taking the Confederates out of Arlington National Cemetery. And guys, stop moralizing about the past, things that happened 100, 200 years ago. It's part of our history. If you're going to stay together in a history, then you should understand it. You should learn from it, but you should never try to reopen those old wounds. And that's exactly what's going on. And either they're doing so in both cases, the left is the one driving this and they're doing it for political gain. And let me tell you something, this is what socialists and communists have done throughout history. By the way, funny enough, we were kind of talking about communist history as we were walking around today. And Tanya Tay mentioned, and because as people know, she grew up in the Soviet Union. So you heard about a lot of this history, but you heard it as if the communists were the good guys doing the good things the whole way. Isn't that right? Not just in Spain, but in Russia and China and everywhere.
Well, I was born in the USSR, and as we know, history is written by the winners. And for the longest time,
except in the Spanish Civil War.
For the longest time in the USSR, the communists were in charge. So, of course, all the literature, all the books, they were written praising the communists, and everything was portrayed from the positive side. So you get the impression that they were for the people, with the people. They were taking all the lands from kulaks, and they were giving it to all the poor people. Yet they're missing the part where all the lands and all the goods were still controlled and owned by the government. And the history of the Spain is yet another example where we are witnessing it being erased. They're trying to take a huge chunk of the Spanish.
Oh, no, go ahead. I had a question.
They're taking a huge chunk of Spanish, not only history, identification, something that is written in all the history books about one side fighting with the other, unfortunate event, rightfully so. But at the same time, this is huge part of the Spanish identity.
It's your identity. So going back to Russia, though, so you mentioned they talk about the kulaks and the process of de-kulakization. We also write about unhumansbook.com. We write about this a ton. What about, and I know it's kind of a subject switch a little bit, what about the revolution in general? What, when you're taught about the Russian Revolution, of course, you're taught about it, right? The February Revolution, the October Revolution. From their perspective, it's, you know, the communists, and these are the historical facts, communists assault the Winter Palace, the Bolsheviks under Lenin, in the October Revolution. And then eventually it leads to the execution of the Tsar and the execution of the Tsarina, his wife.
And all of their children.
How is that dealt with? Now, is that something that they talk about when you're, you know, learning about this? Not just a kid, because, I mean, you went all the way through college. But is that something they talk about? And if they do, how do they present it?
It is talked about. They do not miss the part of this happening in the history. And it is also portrayed, if it is even possible to portray something as brutal as the killing of the whole family with little children, nobody was spared, not even the youngest of them. It was actually portrayed as an act of goodness, if I may say so, for the people, for the good of the people, because the Tsars were the evil ones. They are the ones who were living in this glamorous castle building. They had all the servants. They were bossing all the people around, and on and on and on. It just describes you how evil the Tsar was, and his family, because they were supporting him, and just studying it as a young student, you take it at a face value, and
without
you believe all of it,
because you're so young, you don't have critical thinking yet.
You don't know a different side of the story, and you truly believe that the communists took away the bad guy, completely slaughtered the family for the good of the people, and that now all the goods, all the riches were taken to be evenly divided and given to the underprivileged.
And it's evenly divided and given to the underprivileged?
The perception was there. They were, they call them kolkhoz, as collective agricultural areas.
Commons.
Where the commons, where my grandparents on each side worked. And of course, they were told the story where everybody is working equally, everybody gets the goods per their work. And of course, it never quite lived to that expectation.
Never quite lived up to the expectation. No, because this is what it comes down to. So, I mean, you just said so much there, but it shows the importance of control of education. It shows the importance of, if your side loses and the other side is educating your children, they can make them believe whatever they want. They can make your children believe that you were evil, that you should be denounced. And we saw this, of course, in the Chinese Cultural Revolution. And your children's children will be taught that the ones that killed you and your family were the good guys, even if they killed some of your children. this is, I mean, to me, that what you're just saying right there, in addition to, so I mean, there's so much to unpack, but it just shows the power of education, because education, and now imagine that that's the story that gets told everywhere around the country, and you get millions and millions of people who say, of course, I support communism. They're the good guys. They were always the good guys.
They're looking out for us.
And now think about what they're doing to the education America today, not just about our founders, but about everything. Be right back. That hidden tales of the communist history. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Pre-order in love, Cuba. Can't wait to get my hands on that book. Gonna dive into its pages. Take a closer look on the Russian Revolution. And we're back. Jack Posobiec, Tanya Tay, live Madrid, Spain. We're talking about the Spanish Civil War, the Valley of the Fallen, General Franco, civil wars, the revision of history, what revisionist history is like in a communist setting in the Soviet Union, and how it affects us today. And these policies, by the way, they do affect us today. There's actual far-left socialist policies that are being pushed by our own government right now in the United States. And we're not just talking about, now, of course, there's cultural Marxism. And the cultural Marxism is Title IX, the transgender agenda, the LGBT agenda being injected into every single Netflix show, every single Paramount show, all of the DEI across the country. That's the cultural Marxism. But looks like, did you know that Joe Biden and his administration are trying to do a little bit of the old style of Marxism, economic Marxism too, with their latest plan? Have you heard, Tanya Tay, I don't even think I've told you this yet, that Biden is talking about raising the capital gains tax to 44%.
No. Is that something in the works, really?
So it's a proposal that they're talking about right now. Tanya Tay, tell me, what effect is it going to have if you raise the capital gains tax to 40%? That's like half. That's almost half of capital gains. What effect does that have?
It will completely destroy all the small businesses. The big corporations, the big businesses, they will find a way. They will find a tax loophole. They will find a program. They will find tax deduction solution. But it's the small businesses that will get hurt the most, because they're already running on such a small margin. A little profit that they make, that they might invest into updating their small family-run store, that they will put into, you know, updating their POS system, that will add on into training their employees that could use a little more schooling. Now, that completely cuts
away. Are you saying that American employees at that level are not necessarily the most educated or hardworking in some way?
There's always room for improvement. Let's just leave it there.
So
that little money.
Or if you run like a couple Airbnbs or something like that.
No matter what kind of business you have, if it's a small family-run business, it's going to hurt you so much. And we will feel it, and our kids will feel it, because the number one employer of the small businesses will be the college-age kids who are trying to make extra cash while they're finishing their degrees. It will be high school graduates who are trying to gain that experience. So all the small businesses will opt out after of employing those employees, because now their profits will become even less.
So you're going to have the youth unemployment rate is going to skyrocket.
Unemployment rate, and it will, I bet all that money will be just given for free to yet another immigrant, illegal immigrant that is crossing the border and trying to get as much cash for free. And it just, the opportunities are endless at this point.
A little hot under the collar there,
got a lot on my mind right now.
So think about it, right? If now what happens if that happened to us, if that happened to humanevents.com, so Human Events goes under, National Review goes under, the Postmillennial goes under, you know, the some of the businesses that we're involved with, and all of a sudden our kids get forced to go to government school and they get forced to be taught that this was good, or our grandchildren are forced to be taught that this was good, and people like you and me were these horrific, backwards, injustice, not seeking, you know, the fairness of the worker, blah, blah, blah stuff. How would that make you feel?
As a parent, it would leave me completely devastated, feeling very hopeless that I still believe, as an immigrant myself, I still believe in the American dream. I believe that if you work hard, if you strive for excellence, if you put everything you got on the line, you could truly achieve success. And America has proven in many ways that it truly still is, and I still believe in that, the land of opportunities. But if you present policies like this, it will affect people who are starting something new, who are investing into the small business, who are trying to achieve success. It will completely destroy every dream they have, and it will leave them not only devastated but heartbroken, and it will leave them with no desire to continue do anything, and it will actually push them to the socialist programs where they just reach out to the government and they ask for money to be able to support their families.
It almost seems like that might be the whole point to begin with, rather than the equality, is that if you just wreck the country and tear down all the people who are successful and normal and good looking and have actually achieved something in this world, that it turns out that maybe, just go with me on this, what if the communists are just ugly, disgusting freaks who are, and by the way, Len's over, I get to talk freely now. Oh, it's so nice. And ugly, disgusting freaks that want to take away our lands and our properties, that, and has nothing to do with equality to begin with. By the way, I got to ask, when you came to the United States, you were how old again?
I was 19.
I know this, guys. I'm asking for the audience. So you were how old? You were 19. And how much money did you have?
I had a couple hundred dollars.
Dollars in your pocket. Did you have some? And actually, tell the story. Where did you get that couple hundred dollars?
From my dad. I got it from my dad, who gave it to me to help me support myself in the first months. And he supported my dream. He knew I didn't have much. He was not very happy about me leaving, but he believed in me. And it was something I always wanted. I've always loved speaking English, and it's his belief in me and the fact that I could achieve something, and he didn't want to stop me from dreaming.
And you told me once that he actually like went around to a couple of the other relatives to like put the money together, and even then it was just a couple hundred bucks.
Just a couple hundred bucks.
And for the record, where was your first job when you came to the United States?
It was in a deli department in Safeway.
Working in a Safeway. Slicing meat
and cheese
and working shifts and
asking for more shifts because we were not getting enough
and asking
shifts.
For more shifts. And so suffice to say that the lifestyle you grew up with back home was a little different than the one we have now.
Very different. I feel like I am living an American dream, and I got a beautiful family that I've always wanted. I got a supportive husband who takes me on the most unexpected adventures.
Extremely supportive and devoted husband, I'll add, just for accuracy's sake, a fact check there. But no, I just want to say, because you brought me once to the Soviet building where you lived when you were little, And it was basically, we don't have a minute left in the segment, but it was basically a dormitory, right?
It was a dorm. My early childhood memories are running back and forth. And it was this long hallway. It was often not lit. So you'd be running in like the shady room and it's like going back and forth trying to use all that energy.
Did you guys have your own bathroom?
We shared it with another family.
Shared bathroom. Did you have your own kitchen?
We shared it with another family. We had our own little room and then shared kitchen and the bathroom.
So you had one room.
Yes.
And then
it was
shared,
like a block.
And then you shared the dorm with another family.
Yes.
And they had their room, and then it was a shared kitchen and a shared bathroom. And in the Soviet Union, that was actually considered kind of good.
That was good.
And that's what, folks, you got to understand, in the USSR, that was actually considered good because it was stable. You had a roof over your head, and some of the time, the lights worked.
It was good times. We had lots of kids running around. I was not running by myself.
Can all change in a heartbeat, folks.
History. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Far, but I got a hankering, a yearning deep inside. For this book called Unhumans, I just can't hide.
Jack Posobiec, Tanya Tay, back here live, Madrid, Spain. We're talking about the Valley of the Fallen, the Spanish Civil War, and something that people need to understand about warfare. And one of the things that I was thinking about a lot at the Valley of the Fallen, the fact that Franco, the winner of the Civil War, creates this valley. And he said, reconciliation, yes, but also atonement. And atonement is a very strong Catholic concept. And it's the idea that it's about remorse. It's about actually having remorse for not the things that others have done, but the things that you yourself have done. And it's interesting to me that Franco made this putting everyone together, because I wonder if the reason he used the word atonement was an understanding of, look, in order to win a war, when you're in a war, you have to do terrible things, absolutely terrible things. The United States and the Allies did this in World War I, in World War II, to an even higher degree. And people still argue about those terrible things. And the Spanish Civil War is no exception to that. Absolutely terrible things. But I hear people all the time say, oh, the U.S. should go to a civil war. We should have a civil war if the left won't stop and all this. And I really beg people to understand, and I've gotten even criticism for that. Oh, Poso is talking about Franco. He wants another Franco. So I don't want a civil war. I really don't want a civil war. I really want this to be peaceful. But they just put this movie out, Civil War movie, all about assassinating Trump, and Trump leads the civil, and you know, Trump's dictator, and they have to launch a civil war to get rid of Trump. And there's all this predictive programming going out there. And there's this character, you know, that's like a stand-in for Trump who uses even some of Trump's words. And look, there's horrific atrocities in the Spanish Civil War, but there's atrocities in every war. And Tanya, I was going to ask you a little bit about, in just the little minutes that we have left, you grew up in a country in Belarus that had experienced, decades before you were born, but experienced one of the most bloody wars in human history, because World War II wasn't something that your family went and flew somewhere to fight. World War II, for you and your family and your country, was a little different, because World War II came to your home and came to your doorstep and came to your neighborhood. What's it like when war comes to your town?
It's not like the war movies they show in Hollywood. It's not like the videos you see. It's so much worse. And I only know of it because of my grandmother, who is actually still alive and just a couple of weeks ago celebrated her 93rd birthday.
So Tanya's grandmother Just to say it quickly, she lived through the Nazi invasion, lived through the Nazi occupation, and was at the time old enough to remember it, to actually remember what
she
happened.
She was a teenager, and from her recollections, she remembers where almost every blade of grass was covered in blood. That's how horrific it was. About every third person in now Belarus has died in the Second World War. And let me tell you something, watching the conflict right now between Russia and Ukraine, it feels to me like a civil war in a sense, because those are the cousins fighting each other, people of the same religion, same skin color, same beliefs, if I may. So this is happening in my neighborhood. In a neighborhood where my whole family lives. And let me tell you something, this is the last thing I want to see happen in the United States.
People have no idea what it's like. It sounds like all fun and games until all of a sudden you're hearing that the bombs are falling next door, the bombs are falling on your street, and you wake up and it's who's still alive, who's dead, who's got to get off and fight. And you know, when it comes to the family members, specifically the men, which men were selected to go and fight?
The young ones, all the young boys who hardly had their beard grown. You know, it's all the boys who learn how to hold their guns as they march in the field to face the enemy. It's all the inexperienced ones, and when the young ones die out, they try to select whoever is left, and you often see grandfathers standing up there defending their motherland, because if that's the last act on earth, they were willing to give their lives for it.
So think about what she's saying. That means all the young go to fight, all the young men in your family, and then when that wave goes, then it's all of the middle-aged men, then even up to the elderly. What happens when they come and put a rifle in your grandfather's hands and tell him that he needs to go off and fight? That's what a civil war is like. The amount of killing, the amount of street to street. Everyone knows that the most brutal wars are civil wars. And it's a lot different when war comes to your town, rather than when you go off. And America's been very lucky to have only gone through one of these in its short history. I want to thank my beautiful co-host, Tanya Tay, for not only visiting the Valley of the Fallen with me, but coming on this trip and helping me to do the work for the book, Unhumans, and just always supporting me in all of my crazy ideas and schemes. And I will even say, knowing when to tell me to pull back a little bit if I'm going
to keep you out of trouble
a little bit too far. We're not doing a good job of that. Good enough job.
There's always room for improvement.
Always room for improvement. Yes, as she said before. What final words do you have on this?
Oh, this was a tough one, and there's so many emotions just walking through the Valley of the Falling, going from my mind, and really wish there was peace. One of the main things I pray for when we go to church is for peace in the family, for peace in the country, for peace in the whole world.
And that's why you got to support leaders who fight for peace. Remember, peace is. I want to thank the audience today, X, Rumble, love you guys. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay ashore. This book called Unhumans, I just can't hide.